Does everybody sit down now? Hi, I'm Pat Speck from the University of Tennessee in Memphis. How many of you are going to have trouble with my accent? Okay, well, we'll just get over that, but you can move closer. I also would like to thank Lois Tully and the National Institutes of Justice for actually reaching out to the clinician community. Sexual assault nurse examiners have been in business since 1974. The program began in Memphis, Tennessee, and it was the brainchild of a family nurse practitioner named Beverly Bounds. She wrote a federal grant and got it, and the program's up and running strong 35 years later. The first program is not the only program. There are now well over 800 programs that employ nurses at a variety of levels. Now, I mention that because the National Institutes of Justice, as well as the Department of Justice, have spent considerable time and energy ensuring that victims have a say. And one of the ways to do that is to bring them to care that is therapeutic, coordinated, and can bridge these systems that are so separate. And one of the things we're doing with Dr. Ballantyne is trying to bridge some of those systems. So I speak to you today as a clinician, as a person who's a family nurse practitioner. I have my own practice, and I've started in the SANE business, if you can call it that, in 1982, long before forensic nurse was a language, the word. And so if you understand that, you'll know I've seen quite a few victims, and I'd like to recognize Mike Hill, who's here, who used to bring patients to me in the back there as an investigator in Memphis, Tennessee, and he came up here. This has been a great reunion time. So that said, let's get going. The goal of this presentation is to inform the scientific community about what's known and, more importantly, what is not known about factors that contribute to the successful collection of DNA, including issues associated with the rape event. What is that post-coital environment? What about evidence collection timing? We learned a little bit from Dr. Ballantyne that maybe we can extend some of these minutes to hours and maybe even a day or two. What about the systems-wide financial and legal ramifications of lengthening this time frame? What's it going to cost? I used to say in my early days, please don't identify every victim. We can't handle them. We were getting about 1 in 10 in the 80s that would report to law enforcement. If we got 10 in 10, we'd have been seeing over 3,000 patients a year. And we couldn't handle it with our infrastructure. So all these things have ramifications. What about the time frame? What about the criminal justice system? The more cases that go through, the more evidence that's developed, the more cold hits that happen. What about the SANE community? We have registered nurses and physicians who are working with these patients, but the laws govern their practice. And it's in that legal ramification of the practice. This is a licensed profession, registered nursing, medical physician. These are the licensing requirements in states vary. So if you don't know about that, you need to find out about it. What about the laboratory system? Can they handle the volume? And what about the victims that we all serve? What is their voice here? So that's my goal today, is kind of cover that in about 5 minutes. So, you know, there are multiple conditions that contribute to the successful recovery of DNA, and that has changed over time. Some factors that influence that are known, for instance, the time frame and evidence collection. However, in these new studies, we're looking at an expansion, but one of the discussions that occurred at our TWIG meeting was, well, what about the timing at the month? What if it's an older person? What if it's a younger person? What if they've had a surgical hysterectomy? What happens if? And before you knew it, we had a lot of questions, more than we were answering with what's happening in the laboratory. So these concerns about increasing the costs, increasing law enforcement, increasing SANE time, possibly decrease the likelihood of recovery, and there's just too many questions we don't know the answers to. So I go back to my nurse practitioner practice, and I say, okay, my infertile couple comes in. What am I going to do with that? So if you're not, if you get a queasy stomach talking about some of the things that you don't talk about over the dinner table, you might want to consider walking out, but we're going to talk about it. How many How many people here know what ED is? You know it because of the advertisements, right? Well, you know what? In my area, it means emergency department. But today we're talking about ED, the erectile dysfunction, and ejaculatory dysfunction. So automatically we've got an offender out there that may have these problems, okay, and may not give us anything but a few cells. Because remember Locode's theory? There's cells exchange. I once said to the group at TWIG, give me a cell in the vagina any day over a sperm because sperm travels. You can't get the cell unless it's shoved up in there. Think about it. Condom use. We saw the advent of condoms being used in rape with the HIV epidemic. Okay? And, of course, the famous case in Texas where a baggie was used, and then she was accused of consenting because she asked him to wear a baggie. Go figure. Pre-ejaculate. Most people don't know that that's kind of flowing out all the time, and when it does, it also ends up in the urine, which ends up in the underwear, which can, if it contacts, end up on the victim. And then there are other issues, too. So in 1987, the first assailant was convicted of sexual assault with the help of DNA. And this case was upheld on appeal. They used RFLP. And those of you who know the history know that it used up every bit of the sample. Every bit. So there was no challenge by anybody because it had to be used in RFLP. It took years for these laboratories to gear up. So we actually, in the center in Memphis, Tennessee, started collecting for DNA in the middle 80s because the science was out there and we knew the evidence would be sitting in a police property room, dry, usually temperature controlled, and then if the police could find it, they could bring it up. That actually came to fruit with the Innocence Project. And by the way, that was not very successful in our area. Only one person was freed out of over 40 they looked at. Okay, so what did we know about it pre-1999? And we knew that specimens could be positive for sperm, and this is looking at the skin, the anus, and the oral areas. And look, 3 hours, we could get a very positive skin sample. And then after 5 hours, it dropped. And I promise you, since that's a skin sample at 8, it was in a crack or crevice that wasn't going to be washed away. In the vagina, it was even worse because you get samples, but they go down very quickly. 2 hours, 3 hours, and then you get out here at 39 hours, and very, very few people had a positive semen sample. Now, what was going on there? Because we know from Jack's work that, 6 days out, we should be getting something. Here we are just 39 hours out. So what's the difference? Could it be the difference in what the victim's development is, what their health status is, what their reproductive status is? And so these are questions that we have to ask. And in 1999, Dr. LaDrey said, these data clearly indicate the vaginal site is most likely to obtain specimens positive for sperm. Well, those of us in the infertility area knew that the cervix was the best place, and usually at ovulation, so that you get a real thick cervical mucus, also called the spinbarkeit. And this cervical mucus just loves sperm. So if you could find that, then you hit the jackpot because it's always going to have sperm in it. But they have to be at that time of the month, and they also have to be ovulating. And what happens if you have any of those women who are not ovulating, maybe on their menses, maybe too old or too young? So all of these issues came to my mind, and I said, maybe this is another area we need to ask more about. And of course, there are some winds of change, and that is the forensic science is under fire. And it says, Discover magazine said that it's quite bad. A new understanding about the reproductive tract has to occur in the forensic community. In the historically health community, we get the health tract. We know what health is all about. But the forensic community has not looked at health as a variable. And what about the aging? What about the development? The forensic community hasn't considered that at all because in the laboratory, you get the sperm, and that's where you are. And it's okay, It just is, that's where the discipline is. So we have to reevaluate the literature related to 72-hour evidence, and we're going to look for strong community partnerships, and that's exactly what I think the vision of NIJ was, putting a clinician in with the laboratory directors was really a gold mine of exchange, and so partnerships are important. The infertility literature, there's lots of information about sperm. Let's talk about it. Normal men have normal sperm. Normal men also have sperm that are not so normal, and it could be for a variety of reasons, but let's talk about the normal sperm. 42 to 76 days from the time the sperm produces, it comes out in an ejaculate. Okay? Now, if it's in the process, that means about half of those guys that got out there too early are already dead, and the ones that are too young are not real fertile. So you really just have this kind of bell curve of sperm that are viable in the center. Fertile lifespan is 24 to 48 hours. Male human ejaculate is only about a teaspoon, although many men will tell you it's much more. There's about 1 million sperm there that are viable, and about 20 million sperm, unless you're going to be infertile for the most part. Low sperm count. A fellow wearing boxer shorts all the time, working in Key West, is going to probably have a lower sperm count. That's because the cremaster muscle can't work, which means that it's too close to the body, it's too hot, and the sperm die off. So boxers out, shorts in. Motility. Motility is dependent on the environment it's deposited. Normal sperm morphology is critical. And sperm can have an oval head, a round head, a little mushroom cap. It looks different in different places. And there are structural problems that can contribute to whether or not sperm can be detected. And so if the testes don't descend, or if the sperm are deposited in an area in the vagina that's not the place where it is expected to go, which is the very distant posterior fornix, and maybe it comes out in the mid-vagina because the urethral opening is on the penis and not at the tip, then there's a problem. Blockage in the tubes that transport sperm. Have a guy that's had a bunch of STIs, he's going to be infertile, just like the woman who's had an STI or two in the tubes is going to be infertile. And varicose seals are like veins on the legs. So if you have a varicose seal, that's also going to create some problems with the sperm. So the reality is, unless you have done a medical exam on the offender, you can't know the quality and character of his sperm. How many they are, what time of the month it is, whether he wears boxers or shorts, all of these things may impact whether or not he gets a good 100 million sperm out there. That's the ideal. Get me that 100 million and I'm going to give you a good PCR, STR, YSTR outcome. Now let's look at the vaginal environment. Where is that patient in their cycle? Are they still having cycles? What about if they're before menses? What about perimenopausal? What about menopausal women? What is the menstrual cycle timing? The chance of a woman becoming pregnant at any time in a month is 1 in 30. There's 30 days, you wash out the lining, there's only one day, essentially, that sperm can penetrate. There's some women that are very unlucky, okay? Existing conditions. What happens if they have fallopian tube disease? What happens if they have endometriosis? What happens if they have any number of other things that are going on that you can't control for? And then what about the medications that they're on? And I didn't mention that about men, but if they're doing medications, it affects them also. Just don't drink and take Viagra. Don't take nitroglycerin. It lowers your blood pressure. So the effect of the medications on the genital system are, and I'll give you an example, Robitussin. How many of you love Robitussin when you have a cold? Okay? It's great. It causes the cervical mucus to become liquid and contributes to infertility. So there are medications that actually cause problems. Okay. The other thing you got to know about is that the it's not only Venus and Mars, but there's a battle when sperm gets into the vagina. The vagina considers sperm a hostile invader, and it's in this hostility that the sperm actually says, I can overcome this hostility. So what it does is the bolus creates a gel that forms within minutes, and if it's deposited in the right place, which is by the cervix, that's going to last for about 2 to 4 hours. And then there's a thing called flowback, and that happens because those guys, they just can't hold out, so they get liquefied. And when that happens, it drains out of the vagina. That's called flowback. 35% of sperm is lost in flowback within 5 to 120 minutes. So guess what happens to your capacity to recover sperm? Where is that sperm? It's on the panties. So be sure and look at the panties, because that's where it is. Very few of those sperm enter the cervical canal because they got to swim in there. So the ones that are closest to that cervix have the best opportunity to get into that cervix. How many of you know that the hymen ages? How many of you first know what a hymen is? Okay, for those of you who don't know, that's the cherry that men have this fantasy about. The hymen is a connective tissue that covers like a collar. It goes around the opening to the vagina. Sometimes it covers it completely, that's abnormal. Okay, sometimes it has multiple holes in it, but it ages. It is very thick at birth, it thins out and becomes very, very thin where you can see blood vessels in it. Then it starts thickening again, and it thickens its most during pregnancy. And then it starts thinning again until the little old ladies complain of the men who are taking Viagra that they're married to, because they don't want to do it and the guys do. And they don't want to do it because they're too dry, it's too thin, it hurts, and they haven't realized if they just go into their healthcare provider, you can get some medicine to fix that. So the postcoital sample that's found up to 7 days using the YSTR is found in reproductive women, okay, who have gone to the right spots. They have, I assume, and this is an assumption, normal men they're having intercourse with. And so you've got the ideal sample here. Cervical swabs will produce sperm when vaginal swabs do not. A nurse took some of the stuff that we've been talking about, and she looked, she went retroactively into her data, and she looked at the cervical swabs they collected and the vaginal swabs, and her name's Jean Morgan out of Ohio, and she found that, guess what? We find it in the cervix more often than we do in the vagina. But don't forget those panties. We have a model for information explaining and future understanding of recovery of DNA, and this is called MIEFU, just because I like acronyms. Victim plus assailant means time and activities, and that will all impact your DNA recovery. It is not independent, it's all over the place. We just don't know where it's all over the place. So victim factors will influence recovery, like cellular material, whether it's sperm or cells. The assailant factors will influence the quality and quantity of the cellular material deposited, and the time will impact the degradation process. So the further away you are from it, the more likely you are not to be able to recover it. And the reality is we don't know many of those factors. So let's talk about research rape timing. The incidence of delayed reporters, we know that there's a possibility that those women who cannot come forward in a victim-centered system may actually have an opportunity to come forward 3 or 4 days later. And that's important because it supports the healing. We also know the prevalence is going to be impacted. Epidemiology is going to be impacted. We've got reimbursement strategies, personnel costs, supply costs, collaboration. How are you going to get an entire team to buy into collecting? What kind of investigative costs is it going to be if an officer has to go out on a rape that's 5 days old? What's your community experience? What's your lab doing? Because if your lab is actually collecting after 72 hours, are they in fact finding this sperm? If they are not, don't change your protocol yet, because it may be that we're going to end up with a tool that says if you have A, B, and C, you collect. If you have D, E, and F, you're out of luck. Okay? So unless new procedures and equipment, qualified personnel arrive, or your community experiences, we hope to provide the cohort in this proposal that we've submitted as a collaborative to really get the group of people. Let's talk about it. It's a collaborative of the University of Tennessee and the University of Central Florida. We have applied to the NIJ, and we're going to use the YSTR. Even though it's not maybe used in all the laboratories, it's the common thing. And it's because it takes mixed samples, and way too many rapes are multiple assailants. So we've got to be able to distinguish. You need about 100 forensic nurses. They all know where to go to get the evidence. They know where their cervixes are. And we expect them to volunteer because they've all wanted to give up their bodies for forensic science. So we also want to pay them. And if you know of a forensic nurse, you can certainly be part of this process, and we'd be really happy to have you as a volunteer, too. There'll be certain criteria that need to be met, obviously building on what Dr. Ballantyne has started in terms of collection and timing from the event. So I hope you enjoy my picture. Thank you very much.